Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, West Africa is now free of the Ebola virus, but this epidemiologist says it's not yet time to lower the guard.
There could have been one or two cases missed somewhere, which will show up in a small chain of transmission from person to person.
Excitement in Rwanda as it gears up for the African Nations Championship football tournament.
I'm so excited because this is more than football. We're going to have fun. I can't wait for tomorrow to meet these new people that are coming.
Also in the program, your say and opinions on the stories we have been covering. Stay tuned.
Top story.
West Africa breathed a huge sigh of relief on Thursday after Liberia was declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. This is the third time the country is being declared free of the virus. Previous announcements were ruined when fresh cases emerged. Since the epidemic began in 2013, more than 11,000 people died. For reaction on the good news, Africa Link has lined up three correspondents who have been covering the outbreak in the worst-hit African countries.
This is Julius Kanuba, DW correspondent. It was on March 24, 2014 that Liberia officially declared an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus. The northern province of Lofa was the first point of the outbreak. It was not actually surprising since this poor region shares borders with neighboring Guinea, the main source of the Ebola outbreak. At first, many Liberians doubted the news because of the lack of trust in public authorities. This was to prove deadly for the nation and its people. What was a doubt soon became a nightmare of visible, terrifying consequences. Day in, day out, hundreds of people got infected. So too were they rapidly succumbing to death. Liberia's poor health sector was overwhelmed. The only message by health authorities was for Liberians to avoid touching any of their sick relatives. It was a difficult measure to uphold, given the cultural affinity in Liberia, like much of Africa. As the virus spread, this human sense of closeness was broken. The economy plunged into recession, schools shut down, and Ebola-affected communities quarantined. Liberia also became isolated as some countries banned travels in and from Liberia. On one Saturday in Monrovia, I followed a group of young volunteers that became known as Ebola Dead Body Management. In a bid to break the chain of transmission, the young men collected, for instance, between 25 and 30 bodies in the capital, Monrovia. In short, as German Ebola envoy Walter Lannan once said, the Ebola outbreak put the social fabric of Liberia and the other affected countries in danger. It is a danger that appears to be gone, but the economic and social repercussions remain today. Children who lost their parents and relatives to the virus will never forget Ebola, just as Liberia and the stigmatized Africa in general. Julius Kanuba, DW correspondent.
Sierra Leone returned to normalcy on 7th November 2015, following the end of the Ebola epidemic. The government lifted the health emergency law and the ban on travel restrictions, public gathering, and entertainment centers. Instead, new health measures were put in place, like bucket placed in front of every public building for hand washing. Hassan Kuruma, a social worker who was at the front line in the fight against the disease, said one of the legacies that the disease left is an increase in public awareness about health.
We are happy Ebola is something of the past now. This disease that affects every sector in the country. But one good thing Ebola left us with is the increased awareness of health issues among Sierra Leoneans. As for me personally, I lost close friends and family, but thank God we are now more aware about our health now in Sierra Leone.
Businesses are back in operations and the country is slowly recovering from the toll of the disease. Mutala Mohamed Kamara reporting from Freetown.
This is Karim Kamara in Conakry. The outbreak of Ebola in Guinea was initially described by health workers as a mysterious disease, not until it was confirmed as Ebola by the World Health Organization. By then, it had claimed several lives, including health workers. Foreign investors and other expatriates left the country for fear of contracting the deadly virus. Incoming flights were cancelled. According to WHO, at least 2,500 people died from the virus. 3 weeks ago, WHO declared Guinea-Conakry Ebola-free and is now on a 90-day probation period to see whether no new cases are reported.
Karim Kamara in Conakry, ending that short trip around West African countries worst hit by the Ebola outbreak. So the World Health Organization says Liberia hit the 42-day benchmark without a single case of infection. Is the worst now behind us? A question I put to David Heyman, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
Well, certainly we hope the worst is behind us, and there's no indication that it isn't behind us. But what the worries are today are that there could have been one or two cases missed somewhere, which will show up in a small chain of transmission from person to person, or that there are other means that people are becoming infected, either again from some place in nature, or the question is there transmission in some instances by sexual contact with a survivor? So those are the issues that are being studied, and the country is working hard to make sure that they have the systems in place ready to detect if any of these events should occur.
So what you're saying is that those who still survive the virus are able to transmit it to others?
It's very rare when people who are survivors are able to transmit the virus. And this, if it does occur, would be only in a very small number of cases, and there would be a small outbreak around that. But the government is ready to rapidly detect and rapidly respond to this. And we're sure that they would if this did happen.
And in terms of public health, what lessons has the Ebola outbreak in West Africa taught the world?
Well, there are several lessons. One of the first lessons is that the initial response to an Ebola outbreak must be much more robust than was the response this time back in March 2014. At the same time, it's clear that the most important component of the response is community understanding. And so communities need to be better engaged at the start of an outbreak. And now, after the outbreak, there's a great opportunity to continue making sure that they understand risks from any infection, including those that might emerge from animals.
And now, having said that, how well prepared now are we to deal with, say, another major outbreak of this same magnitude like the one that happened?
Well, we must put this outbreak of Ebola into perspective. There were actually over 20 previous outbreaks of Ebola. Some of those outbreaks did spread to urban areas. One spread in DRC to Kinshasa, and one spread from Gabon to South Africa to hospitals. Yet they were rapidly stopped both in the countries where they were occurring and in the countries to which they were exported. So what we need is just constant vigilance to rapidly detect and respond in a robust manner, but more importantly, we need countries to strengthen their own public health capacity to do that job. Detect rapidly, respond when and where disease occurs.
And would you say that we have that kind of mechanism at the moment right now in Africa?
We don't have it yet in Africa, but we will have it if the global community continues to work together now, having learned from this lesson of Ebola, this very painful lesson.
Epidemiologist at the London School of Medicine and Tropical Diseases, Professor David Heyman.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Whistleblower or slanderer? It depends on who you ask in Kenya. This after the opposition leader Raila Odinga named persons of interest in the Eurobond corruption scandal. During a press briefing for international journalists, Odinga named 8 top government officials, including Henry Rotich, the country's Treasury Cabinet Secretary, as being behind the disappearance of $1.4 billion from the Eurobond fund. DW correspondent in Nairobi, James Shimanyula, thinks the scandal is fast becoming a political comedy.
It's very interesting indeed. It looks like the social media, first of all, was waiting for the naming of the personalities because immediately he did that, there was a flood of comments on the social media to salute Raila Odinga or condemn him in equal terms.
And has anyone of those named by Raila Odinga as the suspects behind the Eurobond reacted to the revelation by the opposition leader?
Swift reaction has come from some of those that have been mentioned, and they are very open in that they are going to take quick legal action to sue Odinga or take him to court so that he can substantiate what he said at the press conference. And then, just to remind you, Makideo, is that Odinga asked the president to declare Eurobond a saga or disappearance of that money a national disaster, and that he said openly again that those named should step aside if they are still in the government and pave the way for quick investigations.
And exactly, that's my next question, James. What proof did Raila have to show concerning the named figures?
What Raila said is that he has gathered evidence, and there is a possibility, although he did not go into details, that he has documented evidence. And Makideo, you have to bear in mind that Odinga is not a simple person like I and others who can stand at a place and say so and so, you did this and that. He has been in the government. We have to bear that in mind. He was a prime minister. So he's very authoritative when it comes to revelation of some of the inside deals by government. So let's assume for the time being that he must have had concrete evidence armed with it on paper, or he must have been fed by his own sources somewhere in Kenya and abroad to the extent that he had to spill the beans so that people know who stole the money. The government of Kenya made it very clear that the government has nothing to do with any theft of that money.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Human rights.
Basic Needs Ghana is an organization that runs a community mental health program. Their work is primarily to rehabilitate persons suffering from mental illnesses. Instead of them being chained, as it is often the case, this organization provides livelihood and skill training for those that have gained stable conditions. About 24,000 people who previously suffered mental health conditions have benefited from this program. Maxwell Souk reports.
Hello.
Adia.
Alhaji Mohammed is sitting on a wooden bench with both of his feet bound together in a shackle and chained to his bed inside his room. At my first approach, Alhaji sounded brilliant when he spoke, but it didn't take long before I realized he had mental health problems. Alhaji lives in a home of Shetu Manyia, a traditional herbalist. Here in Tamale, Manyia is popularly referred to as a witch doctor, and she provides treatment for around 20 people with mental health problems. But why does she put her patients in shackles? I ask.
Recently, the man sitting in this room ran away from us. They searched for him for 3 days before finding him. That's why we shackle them.
Yakubu helped his grandmother take care of the patient.
If you don't put shackles on him, he can run away. They have been running away, and most of them get aggressive and disturb others. But when you put them on him like this, he can't run away.
In Ghana, almost all treatment facilities providing such care and support for people with mental health problems keep their patients in chains. International human rights organizations have criticized the Ghanaian government for not doing enough for people with mental health issues. The government has even said it cannot regulate traditional support systems, such as the services provided by herbalist Shetumanyia. Stephen Azantulo, head of Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice in Northern Region of Ghana, told me, by keeping someone on chains, even if it is for medical purposes, it is a clear violation of their human rights.
Putting such persons in chains for prolonged periods of time, I think it's against our fundamental human rights. That is why it is important that you send the person to a recognized mental health facility. If you send the person to a recognized mental health facility, at least you know how to keep that person in such a way that he doesn't pose a danger to the society.
Azantulo's solution sounds plausible, but in a typical Ghanaian society, that reality is very different. Many here perceive people with mental health disturbances as being possessed by evil spirits. There have been a number of cases where those with mental health issues have been killed. It's very quiet in this forest outside Tamale. I was told it is a group where a lot of ritual sacrifices take place. I couldn't walk in for fear of attacks, but outside I met Rafia Adam, who recounted how her first child, who was born with neurological defect, was sent in the forest and killed.
It wasn't a good experience. They carried him there and they came back without him. That's what they do here, and it's difficult to resist their decisions.
Back to Shetumanyia's compound, where I met Alhaji Mohammed. A group of men had gathered under a shed. One of them is Dauda Abdallah. He claimed he was successfully treated by Shetumanyia and currently learning to become an auto mechanic.
I was in Accra and it started, so I didn't understand and I decided to come for treatment. Now everything is fine. I want to open a big fitter shop and take care of my wife and children.
The task of providing proper support to mental health patients who are currently receiving harsh treatments in hundreds of religious prayer camps and by so-called spiritual healers is daunting. Hopes for Alhaji Mohammed to have his shackles off his legs looks very low.
Maxwell Sook in northern Ghana. You are listening to DW's Africa Link program from Bonn, Germany. It's cheering time in Rwanda as the East African nation prepares to host the 2016 Africa Nations Championship. The football tournament is scheduled to kick off tomorrow, January the 16th. As Nasra Bishumba reports, a decision by the Rwandan government to waive visas for teams and their fans has been received with a lot of excitement.
Irrespective of their number, teams, officials and fans will be taking part in the 2016 Africa Nations Championship, scheduled to kick off on Saturday, will not be required to pay visa fees as is usually the norm. Instead, the government says that the participants will get free visas at all the country's entry points. Bwani Mugabe is the media officer of the National Football Federation and he told DW why this is a big step in the preparations for the football tournament.
The waiving of visas to nationals coming from participating countries going to compete in the African National Championship is a big step that was taken by the government to ensure that all participating nations are able to bring over their fans. So we have 15 countries who are coming over, and minus Uganda, all the remaining 14 countries are meant to be paying visas upon arrival. But the step was taken by the government a few weeks ago was just to ensure that all fans, officials, teams, fans can be able to come to Rwanda, don't pay any visa, and be able to access the stadiums. So it's basically an example of encouraging everyone to be part of the CHAN finals that are going to be held in Rwanda from Saturday.
The decision to scrap the visas has been welcomed by the invited countries and local fans alike. Honorary Rwandans that I spoke to think that the move to scrap entry visas is a good opportunity for Africans to enjoy football and have fun, and also an opportunity to showcase Rwanda's impressive transformation instead of the genocide image that has marred it for years.
Obviously, waiving these visa fees was a surprise, but it was a good move. It's a good move because it's going to bring in many people from different countries, many countries from Africa, And when these people come to Rwanda, they are going to, you know, see the real Rwanda, they see the transformation and get to know about Rwanda, not, you know, about the genocide alone. But now they're going to know that this country has moved on, this country has, progressed. And, you know, they always have the wrong image of Rwanda, but now they're going to get to know what Rwanda is.
This is a very big step and a big opportunity that Rwanda is giving us. I'm so excited because this is more than football. We're going to have fun. I can't wait for tomorrow to meet these new people that are coming.
According to Mugabe, the government injected $21 million to improve on the necessary infrastructure needed, like upgrading soccer pitches, stands and dressing rooms, among others.
Regarding the preparations, we are now into the final stages. Everything is in order. All the concerned parties are working hard in their different domains to ensure that by Saturday the tournament kicks off on a successful note.
The opening match on Saturday will see Rwanda's Wasps take on the Ivory Coast's Elephants.
That report was compiled by Nasra Bishumba.
Your say.
Your Say is a great opportunity that Africa Link gives you to share what you make of the stories and articles that we have covered. Eunice Wanjiru and Privilege Mushaniri have been sampling through some of Your Say.
We started the week by looking at Uganda. The country's president, Yoweri Museveni, has been calling on voters to re-elect him. He said that he needed more time to develop the country. The election is set to take place on February 18th. But rights groups have warned of growing violence. Museveni is facing one of his toughest political battles that pits him against two of his former close associates.
That is Amama Mbabazi, the former prime minister, and Kizza Besigye, Museveni's former personal doctor. Museveni has actually been in office for 30 years and is running for another term. What do our listeners think about this?
Commenting on Facebook, Vusi Mataba said, "African leaders are selfish." And also on Facebook, Jafaro Amidu Kenyatta seems to agree with Busi and writes that African leaders are greedy for power.
Yona wrote that she was afraid to post anything. This must be due to the disappearance of some people allied to opposition candidates. Yona added that they wanted a peaceful change of guard.
Before we continue with the comments, we would like to take this opportunity to thank Francis Kojo Robinson of Ghana for the artifacts he sent to Africa Link. Those are some quite beautiful wood carvings he sent.
Yes, and not forgetting Joe Appiah of Accra in Ghana, who sent us a wonderful Christmas card. It may have come by snail mail, but we finally got it. So thank you, Joe.
And thank you to all of you who have sent us letters and emails with your comments and feedback. So let's now go back to what we covered at Africa Link this week.
Oh yes, Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto is back at the ICC. Prosecutors say they have enough evidence to convict him.
Earlier, I spoke to Aliu Muhammad, who is in Nigeria, and this is what he had to say on that case.
I know that the ICC will never accuse a high-profile person like William Ruto without having an evidence or a strong evidence against him. However, the prosecution may be politically motivated.
Fervent listener of Africa Link and regular USA contributor Aliu Muhammad. So do we have anything else?
Yes, Eunice, we did receive a message from Joel Imupusu. He's one of our oldest listeners who has been sending us letters for years now. And this is what he had to say.
I like DW. It is my favorite station in the whole world because you do give genuine information, and the listening capacity also is always very clear, and the language used is simple and understandable.
Thank you very much, Joel. That's all we had for Your Say this week. Keep those comments coming.
Eunice Wanjiru and Privilege Mushaniri. Remember, you can get in touch with Africa Link with comments, suggestions and opinions by either sending us a text message to country code 49160957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, enjoy your weekend.